Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and I would like to welcome you to Tharisa's full year 2021 interim results presentation. At this time, all participant lines are in listen-only mode. Our hosts today are Mr. Phoevos Pouroulis, the CEO, Mr. Michael Jones, the CFO. The format of the recorded call today will be a presentation by the management team, followed by a question and answer session. The presentation flow is managed in real time and will be reflected on your screen automatically. If you have not received the documents, they will also be available on the company's investor relations website. Without further ado, I would now like to pass the line to Tharisa. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us here today for our interim results presentation. I think the headline that we've published for this half really sums up the excellent performance that we'll be highlighting today, and that is a half that beats the years. As we move through the presentation, you'll see that those numbers for this half have exceeded our annual year financial performance over the last few years. Safety is a core value at Tharisa, and we pride ourselves on the fact that it is entrenched in everything that we do. To that end, we've maintained our industry-leading safety achievements of 0.06 lost time injury frequency rates per 200,000 man-hours worked. Also during this period, we achieved a milestone of 6,000 fatality-free shifts, and we've been recipients of numerous safety and health awards during this period. In terms of COVID-19 and our statistics, we have, since the onset of the pandemic, had 172 confirmed cases, 162 recoveries, and unfortunately, two of our colleagues succumbed to the virus and passed away. Currently, we are sitting with eight active cases, and as of this morning, we've had two vaccine roll-ups. Just touching on that, we have collaborated with the Minerals Council and registered our on-site clinic as a vaccination center in terms of rolling out vaccines, not only to our employees, but to the broader communities within which we operate. We have not yet started with that campaign, and we're looking forward to supporting our employees, communities, and the country as a whole. In terms of the environmental impact that we have on our operations and on the site that we operate, we take responsibility for that. To that end, we have a large rehabilitation provision, and we comply to the Equator Principles, and in turn, are looking at reducing our carbon footprint. We're in the process of setting a roadmap for our 2030 carbon emission reduction strategy, and by year-end, we'll be in a position to share that with our stakeholders in general. We are committed to the upliftment of our communities, and we believe that we have done that successfully and will continue to do that into the future. Importantly, we conduct ourselves with honesty and integrity. Just looking at the care beyond the mine gate. Education is a key pillar of our value strategy. To that end, we provide free education to any adult within the community or our employees that would like to achieve the equivalent of a matriculation. We've had 35 new enrollments during this period. We have 28 learnerships, which is your historic apprenticeship programs, and we have 55 intern graduates operating within or learning within our operations. Just highlighting a number of the initiatives, and this is by no means comprehensive in terms of the ongoing activities that our employees and our operations provide to broader communities and society in general. I think we shouldn't forget that the community are 6% shareholders and owners of the Theresa mine. And this is an unencumbered equity stake, and have now, on the back of excellent financial performances, started to earn dividends through the operations. And they would be receiving their second dividend flow post these interim results. So if we just take a snapshot view in terms of the year or the half year under review, we posted an exceptional EBITDA of $124.2 million compared to the similar period last year of $36.2 million. And really what supported that EBITDA, the tailwinds, were firstly the increased production performance at the mine. We increased our mining year on year, as well as the ounces and tons of chrome that we produced, the PGM ounces and tons. We managed this in a controlled environment, controlling our unit costs. To that end, costs per reef ton mined down, as well as our cost per tons milled down. I think all of this is not possible without the exceptional teams that we have operating, and we refer to it as digging deep. We navigated through the COVID-19 pandemic with all the uncertainties and all the constraints placed upon us, and the various challenges that occur on a day-to-day basis. So without our teams, certainly none of these results would be possible. And importantly, during this period, we signed a four-year wage agreement in November last year with the three representative unions on site, really highlighting the cooperation and good relationships that we have with our employees. I think really without exception, the star performer during this period were the PGM prices, with an increase of 75% in the basket prices compared to the prior period, really giving us that boost to our earnings and profitability. But not to forget that we also enjoyed an appreciation in terms of our chrome concentrate prices, up some 5.1%. In terms of the headwinds faced, and I suppose looking forward, these hold water as well. We've seen an increase in freight rates and logistic constraints, and this really post the second quarter of our financial year leading into the second half of this year. And we can break that down a bit later on in the presentation. A lot of talk around the third wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. I think we've set ourselves up well at the mine. All the precautionary measures are entrenched in our day-to-day activities. We've invested in clinics, in quarantine facilities, and all the necessary tracking, tracing, and monitoring tools that are required. So I believe as a company, we are well equipped to manage and handle increased infections. I think as a country, we would look at the various lockdown levels, but bearing in mind that we're an open pit mine and inherently have social distancing in the nature of our operations, we're able to operate up to level 4 at 100% throughput and output capacity. During the first half, we were hindered in terms of our production due to inclement weather. We had some severe lightning storms, and in an open pit, very much like your golf course, there's a siren that goes off and we need to evacuate the pit for safety reasons. We also had excessive rainfall and even some flash flooding at a point in time. Looking forward into the dry season, our winter months, those issues seem to be less of a concern, and we are guiding that production will increase in the second half. And then we have had some volatility in the exchange rate. The RAND currently strengthening, and as an export dollar-denominated business, we do prefer a weaker RAND. But having said that, we do benefit in terms of some of our other input costs like diesel and freight in terms of dollar-denominated costs. And then there's the perennial concern around Eskom and the uncertainty of power supply and potential above-inflationary increases. While electricity accounts for between 6 and 7% of our on-mine cash costs, it is concerning in terms of the availability of supply. Having said that, we did invest in standby generation capacity, and we are able to continue operations up to level 4 load shedding. So if we just look at the first metric in terms of production for our financial year, half year, we produced 2.5 million tons of run of mine. That was an increase of 8.7% from the prior period, and this yielding 75.1 thousand ounces of 6E PGMs, up almost 13% from the prior period. Also producing some 730.7 thousand tons of chrome concentrate, and that's up 12% from the prior year. And all of this resulting in some exceptional financial metrics, with revenue up at $313.6 million, operating profit at $104.5 million, up 368.6%, and that EBITDA number of $124.2 million. This resulting in profit before tax of $104.6 million, and operating cash flow, I think, impressively at $104.9 million, and Michael will unpack that a bit later. And this all resulting in an earnings per share up sixfold from the prior period at 21.4 US cents. And the good news, I think, for our shareholders and stakeholders is that we've declared an interim dividend of 4 US cents, exceeding our annual payout last year of 3.5 cents per share, and in line with our interim dividend policy of paying out 15% of net profit after tax on an annual basis. If you calculate this for the half, just over 14%, and looking forward at strong cash flows for the second half to top that up. I think pleasingly as well, we look at ourselves in terms of return on invested capital, and a nice 35.1% return there, up from 10.6%. And during the period, we managed to delever our balance sheet and settle our debts, our term loans, and this resulting in us being in a net cash positive position of $29.8 million, with cash on hand of just over $78 million. If we convert that into rands, and you'll see the percentages vary due to the comparison in rand terms, you know, a significant conversion there, just below $2 billion worth of EBITDA, and 1.6 billion rand. Apologies, 1.9 billion rand of EBITDA, 1.6 billion rand of operating cash flow. I'd like to hand over now to Michael, who will take you through the financial metrics for the half.
Thank you, Phoevos, and good morning to our audience. The financial results for the 6 months ended 31 March have really been characterized by increased sales volumes and increased commodity prices, which, when we take it together, are cost control, resulted in record profitability for the six-month period. This also contributed to strong operational cash flows, enabling the balance sheet to be deleveraged, the Vulcan plant to be funded from internal cash flows, as well as the declaration of a very handsome dividend. If we just look at the year ahead, our PGM guidance, 160,000 ounces of PGMs as a midpoint and 1.5 million tons as a midpoint for chrome, and for the 6 months, 75.1 thousand ounces produced and 730.7 thousand tons of chrome piece. So well on our way to achieve that guidance. Just touching on the revenue chart on the left, and this runs throughout the financial section of the results presentation, we are comparing our 6 months performance against the full prior period reporting. We've mentioned increase in the PGM prices, and you'll see there's a significant increase in the contribution from the PGM segment. Looking at commodity pricing on the right, and just talking about the increases on a comparable period, Rhodium really had a stellar performance, up 144%, but platinum palladium also very solid price increases over the period of some 17% each, with chrome up 5%. If we analyze the revenue further, total revenue, as Phoevos mentioned, $313.6 million. And on FCA basis, in other words, stripping out the logistics and freight costs from the chrome revenue we sell on a CF Mainports China basis, PGMs contributing 72.3% of overall revenue, chrome at 23.8%, then agency, trading, and manufacturing, the balance. Looking at the PGM segments, the star performer there with a pull split of 9.7% coming at a 65% contribution to the revenue, followed by platinum at 18 and palladium at 11. The chrome segment, we really produce two key chrome commodities, metallurgical grade, and then what we refer to as specialty, which is foundry and chemical grade, which are premium products, metallurgical contributing 75.5% and specialty 24.5%. And a very pleasing performance in terms of gross profit margin, improving to 41%, up from the comparable periods, 22.4%. With the increase in the revenue contribution from PGMs, we've needed to reallocate our base of shared cost allocation, and the PGM segment has now been allocated 80% of the costs, up previously from 75%, and the chrome segment reducing to 20%. Both segments made meaningful profit contribution in terms of their profit margins, with the PGM segment contributing 50% and the chrome segment just under 30%. The main factors in terms of the increase in the revenue, increased sales volumes, as we mentioned, PGM sales volumes were up 11%, chrome segment sales up 23%, and as Phoevos mentioned, increase in PGM basket price overall very pleasing 75%, and reduced unit costs, which I'll touch on shortly. I think it's important if we look at the gross profit graph on the right there, 128.6 million gross profit, and that's for the 6 months, and we compare that to the 130.4 for the full financial year. So very pleasing performance in terms of gross profit generation. We are a co-product producer. We have remained profitable throughout the cycles. And just touching on some of the key profitability metrics, EBITDA, $124.2 million, up 243.1%. Profit before tax, 104.6, up just under 500%, translating into a very strong earnings per share of 21.4, and the declaration of the interim dividend of 4 cents per share, and a return on invested capital of 35.1. Again, if you look at the bottom left-hand side, the EBITDA for the period, 124.2 for the 6 months, compared to the 113.4 for the full year. In terms of costs, cubes mined and reef tons mined increased respectively by 7.6 and 8.5%, but the cost per reef ton mined at $30.5 per ton, down 1.6%. The tons milled also increased, up 14.3%, and an overall reduction in consolidated cash cost per ton milled, benefiting from the increased volumes, reducing by 5.1% to $44.9 per ton. This cost management is very pleasing in the context of look at the pie chart on the right, where royalties now constitute some 15.1% of our on-mine cash cost of sales. So this matches our overheads and is almost half of our mining cost. The increase in the royalties on the back of the increase in the PGM basket prices and the utilization of some of our capital shields. Chrome inland logistics and freight costs are relatively flat, a key cost as it relates to the chrome segment. However, subsequent to this in the second half, an increase being seen in those particular rates. We are a co-product producer of both platinum metals and chrome concentrates, and if we were to be a platinum-only producer and take the credits from the other PGE elements and the chrome, on an all-in cost basis, that is after our capital spend, a negative $316 per platinum ounce. With the record profitability, strong operating cash flows were generated with an operating cash flow of $104.9 million. Additions to property, plant, and equipment amounted to $39.5 million, of which $13.9 million related to the deferred stripping, with the stripping taking place ahead of the life of mine stripping ratio. We also repaid the senior debt facilities, the term loan, and the revolving credit facilities, absorbing $36 million. And our dividend in respect to the prior financial year $9.4 million, and so at a net cash increase of $20.2 million. The board did approve the payment of an interim dividend post-COVID. In the previous year, because of COVID uncertainties, we had actually suspended the payment of that interim dividend. I think what is particularly pleasing with this interim dividend of 4 cents per share is it exceeds the prior full year dividend of 3.5 cents per share. And just to remind those on the call, the annual dividend policy is to distribute at least 15% of consolidated net profit after tax on an annual basis. The payment of the dividends ensures returns for shareholders, and we continue to pursue growth opportunities organically, such as the Vulcan project, which is scheduled for construction completion in this financial year and is on track to achieve that completion. We also continue to invest in the opportunities in Zimbabwe, and we concluded an acquisition of Selene Chrome on the 31st of March. And for the near term, planned spending in Zimbabwe some $10 million, of which $5 million is allocated to bring Selene Chrome to account in terms of construction of a plant and working capital, and the balance being expended on mainly the Karo Platinum project. With these very strong cash flows, we were able to deleverage the balance sheet and also internally fund the Vulcan plant construction. So we sat with cash and cash equivalents at 31 March of $72.8 million. Our total debt was $43 million, of which Caterpillar Finance comprised 44.6%. Caterpillar Finance, the financing vehicle for our Caterpillar Yellow Fleet equipment and used in the replacement. Our trade finance facilities were 31.8%. These are short-term facilities, mainly associated with the chrome and the movement of that chrome, and that is less than 90 days in terms of maturity. Of our debt, excluding trade finance, 83.8% being in US dollars. At 31 March, we had positive net cash flow of $29.8 million. And look at some of our key ratios. Our current ratio, a very healthy 2.5 times, and a debt to EBITDA on annualized basis at a very low 0.17%. Our budgeted capex for this full financial year was $100.8 million, of which $54.4 million was allocated to sustaining capex, and the Vulcan plant construction, $46.4 million. This all excludes the deferred stripping. Our spend for the 6 months, net of the deferred stripping, at $25.6 million, of which $13 million went to fleet additions, $5.4 million on processing plants, and $7.2 million on expansion capital, mainly relating to the Vulcan plant. The balance of the Vulcan spend for this financial year amounts to some $40 million, and that's in terms of the plan as the project develops through to final construction commissioning phases. Thank you for that, and I'd like to hand back to Phoevos.
Thank you, Michael. So just touching on the Vulcan plant, just to refresh everyone's memory, this is a technology that was developed in-house through our R&D team. It's taken a number of years to perfect the art of recovering fine chrome. And we're very excited at the prospects of this fine chrome recovery plant. Construction is underway and is on schedule to be completed by September of this year. And importantly, we've had a safe site with 484 days LTI free. You'll wonder why we have so many days. If you recall, we started the project pre-COVID and suspended it during certain of the restrictions in COVID and recommenced the construction in October of last year. So very excited. You can see the steelwork and fabrication work going up, and we look forward to the benefits that this project will give to our business in terms of increased chrome tons. So we spent time reflecting on the foundations of the sustainability of any business, but in particular our business. And it all starts with the ore body. And we're blessed that we discovered this huge 860 million ton resource of middle group reef horizons, which in by its nature is a long life, low cost, open pittable project. We have been mining from a pilot phase for the last 10 years, and we still have 14 years left in the open pit mine, thereafter transitioning into underground mining. So no shortage of life. I think the fact that we uniquely approached this project on a co-production basis of PGMs and chrome concentrate means that we've managed to be profitable throughout the various cycles within those markets. And when PGM prices were a lot softer than they were today, chrome carried the business and generated profit. And in the 6 years that we've been listed, we have been returning cash to shareholders in the form of dividends. It then moves into the development phase, the mining. And being an open pit allows us to operate a modern mechanized fleet with low energy intensity, with a high skilled labor force, resulting in these low unit costs. And it's really crystallized during this period in this all-in cost, which is after capex per PTI, so taking all the credits from the other commodities, of a negative $316 per ounce. And then unlocking the value there in the processing, uniquely co-extracting chrome and PGMs, looking at an integrated circuit by mass extracting the chrome up front, and then milling and extracting the PGMs has really unlocked value and allowed us to achieve unexpected recoveries, and through continual optimization and improvements, just refining the efficiency and effectiveness of the business and allowing us on the chrome front to produce a large portion of premium specialized products. And I think in terms of diversification, we went beyond the mine gate at inception. We looked at the logistics, we looked at the marketing and sales of our commodities, and then importantly, we looked at the R&D and beneficiation through our Arco Metals subsidiary, which is unlocking value as we speak with the construction of the Vulcan plant, the operation of the PGM pilot smelting plant, the 1 megawatt plant, with our views and intentions to beneficiate our own PGMs in the future. And when we look at this, we want to replicate this measured strategic approach into the future when we look at our expansion projects and we look at growth in terms of organic growth, opportunities in terms of commercializing downstream efforts, as well as external opportunities. So when we look at the Theresa mine, we have successfully expanded the open pit life and continue to look at opportunities around the expansion. The Vulcan plant will see us achieving our target of 2 million tons of chrome concentrate once fully commissioned and operational. And then we want to deliver on our 200,000 ounces of PGMs from the Theresa open pit. And we've given ourselves 18 months with the various initiatives and optimization drives that we've put in. In terms of commercializing downstream opportunities, the biggest scope for return here is refining our own PGM metals. Currently, we supply our metals to refiners and off-takers, and we get paid a percentage of the contained metal. We believe that in the downstream smelting and refining, we can capture an additional 15% margin, and on these basket prices, that's a meaningful contribution to the bottom line. So that is an 18 to 24 month program, but well on track with our pilot facilities operating successfully. And then we look at our chrome products, and we look at the constituent components, and we look at special steels and alloys, and look at how can we beneficiate our product in a meaningful way to capture more value. And in turn, we're looking at battery metal technologies with the commodities that we currently produce. In terms of the external opportunities, we're very pleased to have concluded the Selene Chrome acquisition. That was an acquisition for $3 million for 100%. And in terms of the investment there, Michael mentioned that we're committing $5 million US to get that project operational before year end, this calendar year of 2021. And that will see us producing those premium high-quality chrome concentrate tons off the Great Dyke in Zimbabwe, complementing our production of metallurgical-grade concentrates in South Africa and providing a diversified product to our existing customer base. and utilizing and leveraging off the marketing and logistics platforms that we've successfully developed. In terms of Karo Platinum, we currently own 26.8% equity in that project. We have just completed the second phase exploration and are underway with the resource declaration on the Great Dyke in Zimbabwe. Very exciting opportunity, and the studies are underway. We believe we'll be in a position to give a clear guidance as to the next steps before year-end, that being September of this year, our financial year-end, as to the next steps and the ideal way of progressing that option and project going forward. Bearing in mind that this is a very rich resource and potentially a source of low-cost, quick-to-market PGM ounces. So when we look at the capital discipline and really leveraging off those pillars of value, processing, mining, and the ore body, we believe that we provide returns to our shareholders in the form of growth, as well as the cash returns in terms of the dividends. So to date, including this interim dividends, we would have returned $50 million, just shy of $50 million to our shareholders. And we're very proud of the fact that throughout the cycles, we've maintained that capital discipline of providing growth on the one hand, but also returning cash to shareholders in the form of dividends. And then important to note is that we haven't sacrificed investing in our business to fulfill a growth strategy or a dividend policy strategy. We've continually invested in our business throughout the cycle and throughout the years of operation, and that can be seen by that bar chart at the bottom, and notably the investment in the Vulcan project in this financial year, opportunistically on the back of very high PGM prices, allowing us to use cash flow to fund that. So that concludes the body of the presentation. I'd like to hand over now to the moderator and to Ilya to run through the Q&A.
Thank you very much for the presentation. We will now be moving to the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star 2 on your dial pad. That's star 2 and wait for your name to be called. If you are dialed in via the web, you may also ask a voice or a text question. We'll now give a minute or so for the questions to come in. Thank you. Our first question comes from Mr. Richard Hutch from Berenberg. Please go ahead, Richard. Your line is open.
Cool. Thank you very much. Yeah, morning, Phoevos and team, and congrats on a very good set of numbers. I've got three questions. The first one is just to your comment on the downstream PGM processing. I mean, that clearly is a massive opportunity. I mean, how do you kind of think about the capital around that? Is it a kind of a JV opportunity, or do you think you'd like to do it alone? And then, you know, just in terms of kind of the powering of that, I mean, obviously, scope one, I guess scope two emissions be quite significant for downstream processing. So is a solar kind of, or some kind of renewable energy the targeted way to fuel that? Secondly, just can you give us an update on where you are with your ESG reporting and where the kind of the next steps are with that and what we should look for? And then just thirdly, on SARS, just on that contingent liability on the royalty, which is in the results, can you just kind of give a little bit more colour around that and when we should expect to kind of hear a resolution on that one way or another? Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Richard. So just in terms of the downstream processing, I think the 1 megawatt smelter that we've been operating for the past 2 years has given us a lot of clarity and insight in terms of the power requirements, the costs, and as you said, the capital. So when we look at our full-scale production of 200,000 PGM ounces, and if we were to look at the power intensity of that, we estimate at this stage that we would require around 7 megawatts of power. So it's not a massively power-intensive process for the smelting portion, and then the hydromet work uses minimal power for that process. So we are currently in discussions with various renewable energy providers and solution engineers, and ranging from solar to hydrogen to a combination of all of the above, to look at not only the downstream beneficiation but existing standby power generation, and looking at reducing our carbon footprint in general. So that leads to your second question about ESG, but before I get into that, in terms of capital intensity for downstream beneficiation, if we look at the capital and the operating costs, and we look at all of that, we still believe there's a 15% net margin in that downstream process for us once we've looked at the numbers. So simplistically, it's a no-brainer. We need to do it. Now, the opportunity arises from the fact that we would have fulfilled our contractual obligations with our two off-takers at the moment. And so those answers return to us and are free. And instead of renewing the POC agreements, we would look to capture that additional value and, importantly, be front-facing in terms of the marketing of our metal. This dovetails, obviously, with Zimbabwe and the potential there of Karo coming on stream and those additional ounces potentially coming into the suite of marketable ounces. So strategic in terms of timing and the ability to develop processes around low-cost PGM ounces. In terms of the ESG reporting, I think you'll note that we have reported on the scope 1, 2, and 3 in our last annual report, and we'll continue to do that. We're busy benchmarking ourselves in terms of our ESG scorecards, and as mentioned, we will have more clarity on our strategy in terms of carbon footprint emission reduction, and we have now a nine-year goal by 2030 to achieve reductions. We are in discussions with OEMs of the yellow fleet. We're a big user of diesel at the moment, and we're looking at different fuels. We're looking at different additives. We're looking at different drivetrains to reduce the consumption of diesel and our carbon footprint. In turn, in terms of our reliance on Eskom and our current standby generation, which is diesel operated, we are in those same discussions for renewable energy, whether it be hydrogen, solar, and or wind and pump storage type discussion. So a lot of effort, a lot of movement, a lot of activity in that space, and we'll be very pleased to report on that in the future. And then over to Michael to explain the contingent liability in terms of the royalties.
Thanks for that difficult question, Richard. Now, I don't know how much technicality you'd actually like on it, but very simply, Tharisa produces a low-grade PGM concentrate, 113 grams per ton, for example, and the Royalty Act says you have to put this in a position of 150 grams per ton, and they simply straight-line the value up, and they have disallowed the cost or variable cost associated. They said, well, okay, fine, you can take the revenue up, but there wouldn't be any incremental cost on that, which, of course, is totally incorrect. The mining legislation is very complex when it comes to mining royalties, and we are now in a dispute with SARS on that matter, and we have an ADR process scheduled for the 2nd of June. I do not expect that we will have a resolution at that ADR process, and that will then be going into the normal challenge of that through a court process to get some finality on the matter. In the meantime, what we do is we account for the liability in the actual accounts. You see a significant increase in accounts payable relating to using the historic basis of the calculation, but we only pay over based on our own, on the revised calculation we believe to be the correct calculation to account for it. And yes, we've got to raise a contingent liability. The reality is if we do win our case and on the basis, then the OSAR is going to owe us a lot of money, and I think that is why this will be taking its way through to the courts. So as to timing, unfortunately, I can't give any clarity on that. You also notice there's the diesel rebate matter, and that's been going on now for some 3 to 5 years while waiting for a court date. So I think it is going to be quite a protracted process overall.
Thanks, Mike.
I'm happy to give it more detail if you like on expertise.
Yes, no, it's understandable. Thanks for the colour on it. Can I just ask a follow-up on the smelter? I mean, Feverish, you kind of said, you know, 7 megs for 200,000 ounce PGM swell. So clearly with the opportunity that Caro has and maybe some of the other kind of, you know, producers in South Africa that don't have the downstream, you could potentially scale up to something larger and give yourself the opportunity to, as you say, treat not only your own material but others and have that marketing kind of potential. So is that an idea or a kind of a thought process? Is that where your kind of head could be at? And again, just on the CapEx, if you wouldn't mind, just give us any kind of handle on what kind of CapEx we should be thinking about for it. Thanks.
Yeah, so we'll provide clarity on the CapEx in due course. We're busy updating some feasibility studies on the South African PGM smelting and refining complex. So I can't give you a handle. It will be a 2022 onwards CapEx profile. So in the new year, we'll have that clarity. In terms of potentially toll treating or refining other parties' material, certainly a consideration and an opportunity for us. The type of process that we're envisaging is modular and potentially allows for bolt-on capacity. So yes, it is a consideration. In terms of the thinking around the Zimbabwean answers, we would smelt in Zimbabwe and produce an alloy there. Whether we would refine the metal in Zim or not is still subject to feasibility. But the initial thoughts would be to get to an alloy within Zimbabwe. So we wouldn't necessarily bring that concentrate into SA to this complex.
Okay, helpful. All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
our next voice question comes from Mr. Arnold van Graan from Nedbank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you very much. Phoevos, thank you for taking my question. Look, it's also related to the smelting or your smelting strategy. So a few questions on that. The first one is around the scale needed to do this. So I guess the first question that comes from that is, when can you release yourself from your current offtake agreements? And does the Tharisa mine as a standalone have, you know, enough capacity to justify that? Or is the Caro project key to that? And you sort of explained that, but I want to make sure whether, you know, we're looking at a smelting project in South Africa and a smelting project in Zim. Then the other question is, when it comes to the smelting, are you looking at existing technology or is this novel technologies and processes than what we are used to in the industry? And I know further downstream, you know, again, there are lots of new technologies that are being looked at, and then does that form part of it? And then I guess lastly, just taking a step back from all of this, saying, okay, 15% margin sounds good, but can you not make a bigger margin from mining projects? So if you're going to allocate capital and capital scarce, is there not better opportunities on the mining front as opposed to, you know, going into the smelting business, which also carries some significant risks? So, yeah, quite a lot from my side. But, yeah, maybe you could just chat about that overall. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Arnold. So the process is unique in the sense that it's not commercialized in South Africa, and we've been piloting it through our direct current DC furnace, 1 megawatt furnace. And so we've successfully proven that our Tharisa ores are amenable to a DC converting into alloy. The downstream process is pretty traditional hydromet refining. So limited risk on that front. So in terms of the processing, it is a low cost, low capex intensity by the nature of the fact that we have low base metals in our concentrate. So we have a low copper and nickel. So the requirement for a base metal refinery is negated in terms of what we produce. So it cuts out a huge complexity in terms of the process and capital intensity. So we've no doubt that it is a great return on investment, and we've proven it because we've been running for 2 years on a pilot scale, and 1 megawatt to 7 megawatts is not a huge scale up, and so we really believe that it fits in with our R&D culture and also provides us with the ability to market our own metals in the future, giving us that exposure to end markets that then leads into the Zimbabwe project. So to answer your question, the scale of Tharisa is mated to the operations, not your traditional AC converter complex that the majors are operating, much smaller scale, and as mentioned earlier, modular. So we could be at 5 megawatt scale units and then modularize them, and the capex, the smaller you go, the better in terms of refining. So it's not necessarily the bigger, the cheaper in terms of smelting. The Zimbabwean operation would be standalone in terms of its own design and smelting, and because it has a different metallurgical constituency with high base metals, it would require a base metal refinery. So that's why we've separated them uniquely and distinctly. But the reality is that we see it as one basket of PGMs and one group that we'd like to market into the future. So in terms of whether we see more value in investing in mining, we are doing that in the fact that we are expanding in Zim and we're looking to grow our footprint there. But I think a natural progression for our business as we grow is to get into refined metal. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that was very thorough. Thank you, Phoebus. Over to the next one. Cheers.
Thank you, Arnold.
Thank you very much. I will now pass the line to Ilya to read a few voice questions. Read some of the text questions, sorry. Please go ahead, Ilya.
Thank you very much. The first question comes is relating to the CapEx spend, and Michael, this is for you. Please, can you clarify the CapEx guidance for F21, stay in business CapEx, deferred strip and Vulcan? And then secondly, what production volumes are you targeting at Sedin Chrome with initial investments? How do the economics compare to your current chrome business? So I'll pull up the CapEx slide for you to talk to.
Okay, good. Thanks very much. I hope I got all those questions right. So the CapEx guide for the current financial year remains of the order of about $100 million, and that excludes the deferred stripping. The deferred stripping in the first half of the year amounts to some $13.9 million. If we continue on the current trend in terms of the mining, I'd expect $13.9 million to be a little higher in the second half of the year. In terms of sustaining CapEx, I mean, highlighted there, it's $54.4 million, and then the expansion is really around Vulcan, sitting at the $46.4 million. Sorry, can I just run through the other part of the question?
Yep. So basically, addressing stand business CapEx, the first strip in Vulcan, and then the second question relates to what production volumes are you targeting at Steam Chrome with initial investments? How does the business stack up against your current chrome business?
Yeah. So Selene Chrome is certainly not at the scale of the Tharisa mine. It is a specialized commodity in the fact that it's a high-grade 48% concentrate that we're targeting, 2-to-1 chrome to iron ratio. So a premium product in terms of its application in the stainless steel industry. So the initial phase, or the first phase, sees us putting up a spiral plant, which is under construction as we speak, and to be commissioned and installed before the end of the calendar year. And we're targeting between 7,000 and 10,000 tons per month of concentrates, depending on the recoveries and yield. Now, we have historically done some pilot test work and some work on the recoverability, so we have a good understanding of the ore body and the scalability of that Selene Chrome project. In terms of its return, because it trades at a premium and based on the historic averages, the IRR is in excess of 35%. So lots of headroom there in terms of profitability. But importantly, it acts as a second benefit to the group because it allows us to put boots on the ground in Zim. It allows us to set up an operating base and importantly, to test the special concessions that we've received in terms of the special economic zone, as well as a number of the other financial incentives that have been granted to Cairo and Saline. So we see it as a stepping stone, a small incremental measured approach into our investments into Zimbabwe.
The next question we have here also relates to Vulcan. Can you clarify what production increases you'll see out of Vulcan and what unit cost reduction you will see from the Vulcan once it is in operation?
Sure, thank you for that question. If we just have a look at the plan is to produce 400,000 tons per annum from the Vulcan plant. That's on the fine chrome recovery. In terms of the costs, it's only on the processing costs that there would increase in the cost, and that's estimated at the moment about some $10 a ton of processing costs, remembering that the material has already been mined, and therefore there's no incremental increase in the mining costs. It's a normal increase in the processing costs, and really the full benefits are going to come through in the increase of some 20-25% in the sales volumes at normal additional costs. So that's where the benefits of that project will be derived from.
The last question relates to rhodium. Can you give some clarity on where you see rhodium going and what do you make of the drop in the rhodium price this week?
Yeah, so a very topical question this week on the back of the announcements out of China and rhodium prices dropping to around $22,000 to $23,000 per ounce off their highs of $30,000. In our view, the fundamentals haven't changed. Demand is outstripping supply. Supply is constrained, and it really is a SA-centric story. So if we look at SA supply, if we look at the deep-level mines going deeper, the CapEx programs that have been announced by some of the majors are really to maintain existing production profiles. So these are not new ounces that are entering the market. These are replacement ounces. So from a fundamental basis, we think the medium-term outlook for rhodium is stable, robust, and strong. Now, the question that we're being asked, what is the price? What do we forecast? And I think it's a dangerous game to forecast the price and whether $30,000 an ounce is justifiable or their supposedly theoretical replacement or substitution cost of $18,000 an ounce. But I think our view is that the PGM basket is going to be high over the next 3 to 5 years based on increasing deficits. Rhodium is an illiquid market. It trades by appointment. It's a very small market. So any trade in the market, a few hundred or a few thousand ounces, can have a material impact on the price. So I think what we've seen is profit taking from potential speculators that have been holding ounces and OEMs and fabricators picking up on the lower prices. So certainly an interesting period in the rhodium price story.
See from the moderator, there's no more questions, no more written questions, so can I hand over to you for concluding remarks?
So yeah, I think a great half year. We're looking forward to the second half. I think we alluded to the fact that we're expecting production to increase in the second half on the back of operational improvements, efficiency improvements, really the focus on grade control, putting in more high quality tons into the processing plant, allowing us to recover more PGM ounces and chrome tons, achieving our guidance targets, and hopefully prices remaining robust going into the second half and allowing us to generate even stronger cash flows. So on that, I'd like to thank the Teresa team for their contribution to these exceptional results, and the effort is vast and is often underestimated as to what it takes to keep an operation of this size and magnitude going. So thank you to all the Teresa team and to our stakeholders. We thank you for your support, and we look forward to speaking to you again. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes today's call. We'll now be disconnecting all the lines at this time.